Hello and welcome to Authenticus. Authentic Business Begins Here. I'm your host, Paul Bachmeier, along with Neil Croft. Today is December 2nd, 2010. And for today, we have a great guest, Elsie Mayo, who is the principal and founder of Mayo and Company, who have a specific product called Soul Branding, which she's going to talk about, I assume, in just a little bit. Okay, so today we're going to hear just in a minute from Neil on his blog post about Know Thyself. And also, maybe he'll talk a little bit about the book that he's putting together, which is actually a collection of these Monday morning misses that he puts out. But we are also very excited to have Elsie Mayo with us. Elsie and I met a few years ago now when actually we met Neil at one of his advances in Santa Barbara. And Elsie's the president of Mayo and Company, and she serves as a counselor to top management in Europe and North America. She's been doing that for quite a long time now. She's been referred to as the guru of values-led branding, and she guides multinational policymakers and their operating teams to integrate profit and social impact priorities to sustained high performance. Elsie, so glad to have you on the show and great to reconnect again. How are you this morning or this afternoon?
Very well, and I'm really happy to be playing with you guys again.
Yeah, that's cool. Just be nice in the sandbox, will you? Okay.
No kidding. The last time was in this glorious setting at Neil's retreat in Santa Barbara. And it so moved me and contributed to me that I am very appreciative. And it was a delight to meet you there too, Paul.
Oh, great. Yeah, it's great to reconnect. I look back on those days very fondly. We got to do it again sometime. Maybe this time in Mallorca, though.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. How's our Mallorca contingent doing today?
Well,
welcome, Neil.
I need to tell you that we're under attack from walnut-sized hailstones at the moment, and lightning. So if I disappear, it's probably to do with the weather.
Got it.
Apart from that, all is well. And as you say, very excited. I think Elsie's perspective on the blog this week will be really interesting because it's the title was Know Thyself, which scholars of Greek history will know was the text that was above the door of the Temple of Apollo in Delphi in ancient Greece. And alongside it was another inscription which read "Nothing in excess," which I think is also an extremely wise piece of advice. But the point that brought me to this was that I was running a workshop last week, and one of the participants at one point during the workshop, we were doing a physical kind of activity, a very sort of left brain physical activity. And at the end of this, and it was a team activity, and at the end of it, she was really angry. She was really furious. And what she perceived, or what she said at the time, was that, you know, this was a very unfair activity because it was very biased towards men, and that she hadn't been able to, she wasn't included, and this was a pattern in her life, and that she was excluded because she was a woman, and it was a male activity, and all this sort of thing. So, you know, that was interesting. We discussed that with her, but she wasn't very happy about it. Anyway, the very next exercise we did was work based on some personality profiling that we'd done before the event. So her results came into that. And it was really fascinating for her, watching her have this just, you know, you could see the light bulb over her head. It was such a powerful moment for her. as she realized that this conflict that she'd been battling with for years was actually not a gender conflict at all. In fact, it was because she had a particularly creative way of thinking, and she was in an environment that was not as creative as she was or is, and it created this, it made it very difficult for her to communicate with her much more intellectual left-brain colleagues because she was coming from a much more right-brain creative space. And it was really, and she was tremendously gracious about it, and she was very honest in appreciating the breakthrough that she had, and sharing it with the whole group, and it was a fantastic moment. And it constantly strikes me, this thing that we invest whatever it is 14 years or maybe 18 years in education, and so many people come out of that process not knowing the very most basic thing of all, which is, who am I? Who am I? What am I good at? What am I here for? And it was wonderful to see this woman having this breakthrough. But you know, what a shame that she'd not been able to discover that stuff earlier on. So my post this week was really about that point, that, you know, self-knowledge is such a pivotal part of a happy and fulfilled life. And I know this from my own experience, because it took me a long time to figure out what I was about and what I was here for. And, you know, the difference between the two states is just enormous. And then, applying that to a business context, which is really where Elsie makes that bridge to branding, which is, you know, how for a business, for an organization to know itself, what does that mean? And what are the important bits to know, and what do you do with them once you do know them? So that's why I'm particularly excited to have Elsie on the call today. There you go. Rant over. We can return to normal conversation.
Excellent.
Paul,
ahead,
did you
Elsie.
Want to step in here, or do you want me to respond?
Well, I'd love for you to respond if you feel so compelled, please.
Well, I'm, you know, part of my delight in being in this call with you two is, recognizing and experiencing the nurturing that I get speaking with like-minded individuals who are, at pioneering and at the edge and continually renewing the learning that we have and the application of it practically in a business context. I'll just start by saying that you didn't know this probably, Neil, but I'm an ancient Greekophile, and I actually forced myself to memorize 2,000 irregular ancient Greek verb forms just so I could read Plato's Symposium way back when. That's
wow.
How passionate I am about the Greeks, because, you know, it's the wisdom in the phrase that you pulled out, know thyself and nothing in excess. There's nothing new on earth that we need to solve our big problems, I think. Part of the thrust of our work, as I think with yours, is to reconnect to that deep inner knowing. And that's what I refer to as the soul when I talk about soul branding. It is our humanity. It is the best of our intentions seated in this place of eternal knowing and awareness. So, like you said, the beauty of discovering who we really are, I think, includes this part of ourselves which has not had much permission to come out in the business world. If you look at the dynamics of the business world being driven by wealth accumulation, wealth generation, and even wealth concentration, you know, in a world where Wall Street's requirements for quarter-to-quarter profit improvement dictate the decisions that major corporations, I think the most powerful forces on earth, or the most powerful organized cohesive forces on earth, make their decisions based on, you know, the numbers that they can generate quarter to quarter. So that part of ourselves, that deep knowing that sustains life, that goes back and respects life and life with a capital L, has been suppressed, I think, recently. So anyway, that's my rant. And coming back to the Greeks, you know, I'm really happy to be on this show, leading with the Oracle at Delphi.
Yeah, and I think there's something really interesting that you say there, which is your you bracketed what you said by recently, because it may be you know, our experience for the whole of our lifetime, but in the story of humanity, it's really very short. I mean, it's less than 50 years that we've lived in this particular way. And so there's nothing inevitable or right about it at all.
Yes. I'm enthusiastic about your saying that, because I think that the world, if you will, or what I refer to as the digital demos, you know, the global demos, the people, are waking up to is that fact, that just because many of us were born under this umbrella of experience doesn't mean that you can't close the umbrella or shift to another one. And I think what we're seeing now are the tectonic plates of our global society shifting. And those are plates of, you know, economic systems, political systems, environmental systems. And although it can be frightening, and I think for a while we've, as a people, been paralyzed by the shocks of the tectonic jolts, the good news is that, you know, there are openings under those plates. When they move, they create openings. And what you've said is another example of that. There's an opening here. There's a chance for movement and transformation, and I think you've been at the edge of that with your emphasis on authenticity. Because, as I said, I think the part of our authentic selves that has been suppressed is now demanding to come out, and you see that in the way that again, I'll call it the digital demos, the people who have a voice through the internet are demanding co-creation from corporations, for example.
Well, thank you, Elsie. But also, you know, I think when you talk about the tectonic plates shifting and the digital demos, I'm just thrown back to the current conversation around WikiLeaks that's going on, and how the mainstream media are reporting here anyway, the mainstream media are reporting it, but they don't seem to be understanding the significance of it, or they don't seem to be discussing the significance of it. I mean, beyond the political significance, which is this tectonic shift that suddenly, you know, back, Elsie, you and I, 10 years ago, 12 years ago, in the dot-com era, we were talking about enforced transparency, that transparency was inevitable. Mm-hmm. You weren't going to be able to hide stuff. And now, you know, and we were largely talking about it in a commercial context, mm-hmm. but what's going on with WikiLeaks now is demonstrating that actually this is, you know, this is a political context as well, that transparency is, and, you know, control is an absolute illusion.
Yes, control's an illusion. And, God, you know, as you're talking, I'm getting so excited because I'm imagining all the world leaders totally naked. And, you know, there is just nowhere to hide anymore. There's nowhere to hide your motives. And let me give you a little aside. Yesterday I had a conversation with a young woman executive. Her name is Morgan Hamill. She's given me permission to mention her name publicly, who has published a thesis that she completed at Utrecht University on the role of motivation in the effectiveness of building trust between corporations and society. And one of her key findings is that caring is a pivotal piece of trust. And you can't, and this is my editorializing, you can't fake caring.
No.
So, you know, as the facades, I respect diplomacy, and I realize that, you know, there is a sensitivity and an elegance and a delicate nature in helping to bring together what appear to be disparate interests, like different political interests and economic interests. Nonetheless, you know, the pendulum has swung so hard here with the WikiLeaks, which is shattering the assumption that it has to be all in secret and it has to be manipulative, et cetera. So just to swing back to your point about authenticity, Neil, we have to be authentically human because there's nowhere to hide, you know, and connected to our higher interests.
Yes. Well, and this is, yes, exactly. And so authenticity becomes the only path out of this. But it, I mean, it's fascinating to hear the sort of political bluster aimed at WikiLeaks and Julian Assange, and you know, the but as you say, they're naked. I mean, they're just exposed, and they're seriously flustered by it. And it's fascinating. And equally, I agree with you. I mean, I think the WikiLeaks is a pretty blunt instrument, sort of ramming its way into the diplomatic niceties. And it's not to say that diplomacy is a bad thing, because I think one of the things that people often say to me when I talk about the truth and speaking your truth and not compromising, people say, well, yes, but it can be very hurtful to tell the truth. And I think this is the essence of where what diplomacy is all about, is about telling the truth in a way which is not hurtful or harmful or damaging. And
well,
learning to shift diplomacy from secrecy to positive truth telling is an interesting shift.
Well, I'm going to refer back to something else that I heard you say. I think you said it in this blog, but I know you've said it before, and that is the L word, that, and I know this from my personal experience, honesty can be a painful thing, especially when it's not delivered from a place of authentic caring and love and respect. And so, again, I'm brought back to the place to start dealing with this new reality is connecting to that authentic self in us that is humanity, that is a part of humanity and sees itself as part of a web of life. Some people would call that love. You know, maybe that's an easier way to think of it. And when we engage with each other from that, you know, genuine caring and genuine concern and compassion, then I think all things are possible. We'll know when to be diplomatic.
Yeah. And the distinction that I'm making these days is between transactional and loving. And we're so used to transactional relationships or transactional conversations, transactional diplomacy. You know, what's in it for me? You know, and that whole thought process of you're only as good as your last deal, you're only as good as your last whatever, that is the transactional mindset. And what we know, the truth that we absolutely know, we all know this, is that the only relationships with people or places or things or activities that are sustained are the ones where there's love involved, the ones which go beyond the transactional. And yet we've braced this whole enterprise of our society, and the last 50 years or so has been based on an almost wholly transactional idea.
That's a great way to put it.
We're seeing that transactional idea is fatally flawed right now.
Yes, and I would also step in and share with you some self-realization that I've been having, because as the world is shifting on tectonic plates, so do I. And I ask myself these questions, because everything is up for grabs now. You know, like you said, 10 or 12 years ago, you and I were talking about authenticity. I was talking about soul branding, and we were like beacons saying, here's where it could go. Well, that decade accomplished its goal in a way. You know, we raised awareness. It raised awareness. And now I'm faced with the reality that there's enough momentum here. Now what are you going to do? You don't need to raise awareness anymore. How are you going to move this forward? And so I'm forced to look at the value of the transactional skills and impulses that we have in business. I love business for that, because business gets things done. And I think that what's been missing is that the objective or goal of it has only been half of an apple. You know, we need the other half, and the other half is well-being for the web of life. And so I don't want to dominate this conversation, but I can give you an example of that encourages me, of a client that actually is finding a way to integrate both in a way that actually drives their revenues and their market share, while at the same time completely integrating and serving a very real social need.
Yeah. I think we're moving towards the social entrepreneurs driving cultural change, and I think that's really what authenticity is all about, as well as soul branding. Elsie, you are going along with a specific thought there when I rudely interrupted. Do you want to continue with that line of conversation?
Well, I can give you I guess where I'm going with this is that there is a sense of awareness and uptake, if you will, for the points that you just made, which is that conscious leadership, social entrepreneurship, these are the bright lights. These are a new way that can help us navigate these, this unfamiliar territory of our changing landscape globally. And what I'm excited about is the potential for business to accelerate that change in this way, that there is plumbing and there are systems in place in business through which things are accomplished, primarily for the purpose recently of, as I said before, wealth accumulation and even concentration. But as those social entrepreneurs and the conscious leaders and the people who demand it reshape the corporate agenda to affect the way the company sees its role in society, then the company is going to need some help tweaking the systems so that the systems are no longer geared toward short-term returns. And I just wanted to make a couple of points and see what you guys think of it. One of the systems that most effectively can change and help this go forward is the marketing system itself. What has emerged as the CSR system. These are two silos in organizations now that we've had an experience with some clients when they start to integrate the marketing function and the corporate responsibility function, some very exciting magical things can happen. And one of them is an example I'll give you with a global food produce company that wanted to bring greater harmony to a disparate collection of CSR programs that it had around the world. And so they asked if we could help them harmonize their CSR functions in a particular region. And I said, you know, you sure can, but boy, how would you like to do it in a way that actually grows your revenue base, strengthens the brand experience, and energizes your employee base? And they said, oh, okay. And so I said, you know, this is an experiment. We're going to see if it can work with you. And so what we did was take a look at the societal needs in this particular market region of theirs. And we were looking for a question: what is it that keeps the people in this society up at night? Not concerning products or services. What is it as people that they are most concerned with? And we identified five issues that were common to an apparently disparate area, otherwise apparently disparate marketplace. And then we looked at this company's core competencies, its core values, and its brand positioning, brand permission. And we found the place where they intersected. And this group of executives who were in the workshop were so energized by finding the place where their core values, what they really cared about, their core competence, what they did well, the permission they had with their brand, and society's needs actually came together in a new product area.
Mm.
So my point is that it's not going to take too much tweaking to actually have business be a self-renewing force of well-being for society, but it will take the will. And I don't know what you think about the will of mainstream business to try something different, but I'm very encouraged because our models are showing that this can happen.
I think that's fascinating, and of course I've heard other similar case studies, and I have similar experiences myself. What's intriguing is that this stuff is both in a way obvious in that, you know, to those of us who are looking at it, it's like, well, yeah, of course that works. And it's demonstrably successful, as you say, and yet there is this enormous majority of people in business who are too afraid to go there.
Mm-hmm.
And the real challenge for us and people like us is, How do we reassure, how do we engage with those people and show them what they're missing out on? Because the reality is that if companies don't go down this path, then pretty soon they'll be replaced by a new competitor or an old competitor who is going down this path. So not doing anything, not pursuing this kind of path is not the safe option, and yet people in that situation perceive that it is.
I agree with you.
Absolutely spot on.
I agree with you. And in this particular situation, the jury's still out whether or not the missing ingredient will turn this into a successful venture for this company. And you know what the missing ingredient is? Leadership. That leadership needs to step in and say, and bless it, and bless the process, and bless the willingness of those players who sat around the table to put their egos aside and create something collaboratively, and put the system in place that's going to reward them in compensation, tangibly, for having done so.
Here's the prediction. Is the founder involved in the leadership?
This is a global institution, so it's way beyond founder lifetime.
So my sad prediction is that no one will have the authority and the courage to do it. I think it does happen. It does happen that someone who isn't the actual founder has the courage to and the authority to say, we're going to do this. And everyone rallies around them. But it's very rare for someone who isn't the founder to have that kind of authority in an organization.
Well, you know, I think you bring up an interesting point, that in small to medium-sized organizations, there may be a different dynamic around leadership than in transnationals. But we all know of transnationals that have reinvented themselves, culturally even.
Yes.
And it's come with a very strong leadership stance. I'm thinking of IBM and Lou Gerstner. When Lou came in there, he shifted the culture very deliberately.
And GE?
Jack Welch.
With Jack Welch.
But yeah, and Ford.
If you look at... if you look at other companies, if you look at Microsoft, since Bill Gates left, and even though Steve Ballmer is as strong as he is, they've not been able to do what they need to do.
I don't think that Steve Ballmer represents the enlightened leadership that we're talking about.
But he's not been able to. He's not been able to have the authority to do what he wanted to do, let alone anything more enlightened.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
I just think that authority, and this is exactly to Elsie's leadership point. You know, leadership, real leadership of the type you're talking about, is a pretty rare commodity, and it takes an enormous amount of personal courage and self-knowledge and tenacity to push a very large company around in the kind of way that is possible, but relatively rare.
Yeah. Now, and here's another thing. This is the thing about systems. This is why I am so interested in systems, because leadership is, in a way, an idea. I mean, it may be embodied in a person, or appear to be, and it could also be, this is the role of the corporate brand also, that the corporate brand takes on characteristics that extend the span of influence of any human being. So when that leader, that human leader, starts to use the brand as a standard of behavior, which is imbued with certain principles and values, then that person's sphere of leadership influence can be embraced by every person in the company in terms of their understanding and embracing brand values and brand principles, operating principles. So, you know, and this is part of what I think Gerstner was able to do. You know, he was like the interrupter, if you will. But then once the space was created, just like now with these tectonic plates creating openings, what are we going to fill in there? And part of the, you know, what could work is to fill a new value system, a value system that is partially already embodied in each one of us, which is what you guys are doing with Authenticis, helping people reveal and discover their inner knowing, that deep know thyself, the answer to the question, know thyself, that soul of better angels inside each one of us. I don't know if that makes sense.
No,
a perfect sense. And,
yeah.
And of course,
yeah, it does.
To do that, people need to know themselves, and they need to trust themselves.
That's absolutely true. What I wonder, and maybe one of you has an opinion on this, is if we want to think that we can actually get to where we're saying we want to go, why is it that Neil's blog post this week, exhorting us all to know thyself, is, you know, sage advice that's been around for over 2,000 years, and yet in some way in the business climate that we're in now, it seems as if it's completely novel. How is it that we could have lost this for a time being, or it hasn't been so woven into the fabric of how we did business that we wouldn't have gotten ourselves into the mess that we have in the past few years?
Is
there a way out of
it? That is a really, really tough question. And I think that there were, I think there were some forces that were, that have been at work over that period of time, where actually what occurred was that a group of people figured out that if you could fake meaning, if you could intermediate in people's sense of meaning, you could control them and you could have power, or at least you could have an experience of power. And I think that a lot of people, a majority of people, were fooled by this this sort of selling of meaning. And the reality goes back to Delphi, know thyself. It's personal responsibility to figure out who you are, to take the tools that are available and work out who you are and what you're about, to seek the help to find out who you are and what you're about. But what was peddled for a very long time was actually an abdication of that responsibility. And so where we are today is that people are not used to the idea that they have to take responsibility for figuring these things out for themselves. And we did lose it, and we went on a detour, and we're kind of being forced back to that path, that authentic path, finally, after our detour. That's one take on it. That's my take.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
I like it. I mean, this idea of it resonates for me in a number of ways. And my first response to your question, Paul, was we're human. It's cyclical. It's happened before. Think of the abdication of responsibility to religions, religion being the opiate of the masses, remember. You know, there is something in the human psyche, I guess, that really would rather have somebody else take care of everything.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of a default position, you know?
I was alluding to religion very circuitously.
Right.
I think you're absolutely right. I think people are tempted, you know, it's like, oh well, someone comes along and says, well, you know, we'll take care of it all for you. You don't have to worry about a thing. You know, that's a pretty beguiling message.
I like it. I mean, I've bought into that from time to time, and you know, I'm continually wondering, what world am I living in here? And you know, it also brings me around to the need for my profession, if you will, to reform itself. And I think that, and you've seen this on my website, I think marketing, you know, those who have so mastered the selling of meaning for the purpose of power, intentionally or not, really marketing, the marketing machine needs to take a look at itself. And, you know, I'm not, I also am very humble about this because I've been part of that. You know, I mean, I know the allure of communications as a professional. It creates reality. Communications can lead reality. That's why I got into the field. I love the idea of helping people to see where they can go, articulate that, and then reverse engineer a program to get there. I love that, doing it with people and companies. But I think the marketing machine, as you said, in selling meaning, has just really gotten to the point of decadence. And at the same time, I want us all to remember that we're human. Part of being human is going through this, is going through cycles of awareness, sleep, waking up, and changing. Yes, and now, you know, we're in this together.
Yeah, and there's no blame attached. The point is to learn in order to transcend, because failure to learn is going to be pretty uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is uncomfortable. I mean, it's very uncomfortable in the States.
Well, and the potential is for it to get significantly more uncomfortable. I mean,
yep.
If we don't figure out how to live sustainably on the planet, if we don't figure out an equitable financial system, if we don't figure out how to manage energy, it's going to get very uncomfortable. And the path to figuring those, I mean, and these are all totally interconnected. They're not separate things. They're not separate issues. And they all come back to this idea, the idea of authenticity, the idea of knowing yourself.
Yes, and behaving accordingly.
Sure.
And so just to loop back to your point about leadership, and you raised the question, what's it going to take this may be your question, it may be mine, for leaders to step up and, you know, lead means to come out of the comfort zone. Lead means to step ahead. What's it going to take for a critical mass of leaders to come forward and say there is a new way and we're going to try this out? I think, and you know, asking about what's my role going forward after, you know, 12 years or so of saying, hey, this is doable, my role, I think, is to take their hand and walk with them and to show them the models that have been working so that they might co-create the models that will work for them. I think we need to show it can work.
And I think essentially that is our role, is to support people with the evidence in their language that of what works and support them through this journey. Paul.
Yeah. Well, I think I'd like to add that it seems to me that social entrepreneurship really does feel like the way forward and the way out, because we need that conscious-minded leadership to put aside all the concerns that we have from the red states, for example, that think if you're doing good things or you're caring about other people, well, you must be a socialist, you know. But if you are actually running a rigorous for-profit operation, that's should help to dispel that fantasy, or I hope so.
Well, we had a wonderful quote, which kind of typically with these things sort of went under the radar for most people, I think, from one of the UK politicians, who said in more or less genuine horror of the banks that they he said. These banks are not contributing any social value. And it's like, and of course the double irony in all of this is that the banks that he's referring to currently belong to the taxpayers. so there would be some logical justification in them offering some social value. But But this sort of breakthrough notion that actually large corporations do have a responsibility to deliver some social value, that needs to gain some traction and some currency.
I think there is I'm encouraged by some good news. I think that there is an awareness of that. And I'm seeing it in even the marketing industry and spokespeople for the marketing industry saying that the social role of business is essential to business operations and success going forward. I think my job, is to show them how and to emphasize deeds and content and de-emphasize talking about it. Getting into the trenches,
and
holding hands and doing it, building the systems in these organizations that can deliver that.
And making it an integral part of your core operations, because just having a CSR program is not really enough. It has to be core to what you do and what you feel.
Yeah,
and
I say it's detrimental because it distracts you from what you really need to do, which is be it.
Exactly.
And the future of marketing, the authentic future of marketing, is that marketing needs to become about empowerment.
Engagement
through empowerment. So by empowering your customers, your target audience, because if you look back, to the sort of good old days of marketing, as it were, the very opposite was true. The job of marketing was really to disempower people in order that they bought the product. And now, with these tectonic plates of transparency, and a relatively better educated population, the only game in town that's really going to last in marketing is going to be empowerment. So actually empowering people to make choices. And you see glimpses of this nowadays. I mean, Zappos, for example, is a great example. They just are your shoe portal, whether the shoes you buy happen to be theirs or not. Empowering consumers to get the right shoes for them, not just to get the shoes that the vendor happens to sell.
Yeah. Well, this has been a fantastic discussion. We literally have just a couple minutes left. I want to make sure that we have some time for Elsie to let folks know how to get in touch with her, because obviously she's got a lot of great value to add to companies, and want to make sure that everybody can get a hold of her when they need her.
Thank you, Paul. Well, for one thing, you can go to my website, which is soulbranding.com, S-O-U-L, branding.com. My email address is Elsie Mayo, ELSIEMAIO, @ soulbranding.com.
Awesome. Yeah. Great. And there is a blog post up at authenticist.net, and you can I should add a link to your website while I'm on there.
Thank you.
And also you can find Neil at authenticist.net or authenticist.com. And we'd like to thank the folks at Vivid Life for allowing us to put this together for everyone, because we're all interested in more conscious, sustainable living. Elsie, thank you so much for being on the show. It's great to reconnect. We need to stay in touch more often.
Loved it, and I'll see you in Mallorca or New York.
Yeah.
Elsie, an absolute delight as always to talk with you, and absolutely not so long next time.
Good.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us.
Great. Thanks, Neil.
Thank you,
Elsie. Yeah.
Bye bye.
All right.
Bye bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.